Welcome to the Redacted Apostate, where we talk about cults and culty things and being raised in a cult. My name is Nicole.
And my name is Carl.
And today I want to talk about the latest Netflix documentary called The Program, Cons, Cults, and Kidnapping. And this was created by Catherine Kubler. And kind of my takeaways from watching it. It was a 3 or 4 part episode, season, I don't know what you call it, three or four episodes.
It was like a documentary. Miniseries.
Miniseries. Yeah. That's the right word.
Yeah.
And she had been working on this for at least 10 years for quite some time.
Wow.
And her story is kind of crazy. So she was raised in a fundamentalist Christian background, and her mom died when she was 2 of cancer.
Okay.
And her stepmother encouraged her father to send her away to a Bible school. And at the Bible school, she was drinking one bottle of Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Yeah.
And they sent her away to one of these cult camps that they send kids to.
Yeah. Okay. So the person that wrote this series is the person that was represented in the series, right? It was about her and what she went through.
Yep.
In this. Okay.
And her group of friends that went through this conditioning, I guess you could say it.
Right.
I don't know the name of the school. The school was like Ivy Ridge or Ivy something or something like that. Just a normal, innocuous name. And it's a actually pretty deep whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Something interesting, as I'm watching the court case of the Crumbleys, the two parents that their son shot up a school, killed four other students, and injured several others. One of the catalysts for him getting to the point he got to was he lost his only friend, and his only friend left suddenly, and he couldn't contact his only friend. And I think now, kind of piecing it together, his friend got sent to one of these.
So it's a possibility. It's a possibility. It makes sense with what we know, which is, you
what
know,
came out in court.
Yeah.
That he was sent to. Because, like, how does a kid just disappear overnight and then you can't contact them and their parents are still there? It's because they ended up at one of these
military
places.
School or a place like that.
But even military school,
you can still contact.
You can still call. Like, once you go into those programs, you can't even call your parents.
And the weird thing is that, you know, them not informing any of his friends or people that he knows, or not him not having the ability. Because usually, like, you go to military school, it's like, you know, you have time. Like, you're going to say, dude, I'm being sent to military school.
Right. You know? Yeah, you can prepare. And these kids are literally taken in the middle of the night.
Damn.
And then sent to these schools. And so they go from being a normal kid to literally being reprogrammed. And the whole series, after it was over, I cried for like 30 minutes after it was over. I was crying through the whole thing. I think in the first like 5 minutes, I was crying and I couldn't stop. I mean, it was just that horrific.
Yeah. I mean, when you came up, you seemed almost devastated.
Yeah.
Of what was going on in the series.
It's pretty traumatic to watch. And it's pretty traumatic to watch these young minds be brutalized as much as they are. And their physical bodies, you get over that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But their minds, they were literally reprogramming their minds.
We had this discussion in the past, you know, where part of indoctrination is, you know, the breaking down of the I guess, the id, the self, and rebuilding it up. It's destruction.
Yeah.
Know? And I, you know, and what I alluded to in the other episode was that it depends on what you're trying to accomplish with this, right? But this almost seems like it's an obedience sort of thing. Like, you're not being an obedient person, so we're going to send you there, and they're going to teach you to be obedient because, I'm sorry, it's a Mike's Lemonade.
Right. There were part of her group of friends. There was two kids in there that didn't do anything wrong. Their parents just thought they could benefit from this school. God.
Yeah.
And now these parents wonder why their kids don't speak to them or not. It's so horrible. It's so horrible that a parent would do that. And I think it's back to high control.
Mm-hmm.
It's when your child doesn't behave or act the way you want them to. And so you do something, parents do something like this because the child is not conforming to their standards.
Right, right. I do have a question, is who are the people that are running these centers? Like, what is their affiliations?
It's crazy. So it
I
is,
assumed so.
Yeah, it is crazy. So they have no education. So the people that are running these schools are uneducated morons, very clearly. I mean, very clearly. None of them have degrees.
Right.
They use some kind of online Bible teaching course.
And this is where I was going with their affiliations. Right. Was were they like, you know, secular, about, you know, like they were just no. secular, but wanted to do some good and
no.
screwed it up? Or,
okay. No.
So this is a very religious-centric.
Yeah.
Operation. Okay.
So it's Mormon,
mm-hmm.
the leaders of these schools or these re-education.
This is my camp. Shocked face right now.
Right. Yeah. And I'm just going to call them re-education camps because I don't know. They're not schools. They're places where parents send their children because the children are not conforming to what the parents want. And they're sent there to be re-educated.
That sounds like an accurate description of what they are.
And there's no regulation over any of it. A couple of years ago, Paris Hilton tried to, like, instantiate.
I forgot that she was sent to one of those. Yeah. And she turned out without any issues.
Right. So. And that's the thing. It's like, there was one line that really got to me, I think, that kind of just made me cry even harder,
right.
was the district attorney for New York, a former district attorney, he said, there's more regulation for dog kennels than they are for these schools. I mean, and you just think about how heartbreaking that is and how we are ruining these children's lives because parents, and you know, we have difficult children. We just do.
Yeah.
We have difficult children. We have non-conforming children. They
conform only when you give them what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I also want to preface it too that, yes, we have non-conforming children and I love them so much.
Yeah, love them.
I really do love them.
There's not, especially when you have a child who has serious anger issues, who is at the extent of where they're harming themselves and they're harming others.
Right.
There's not a lot of resources. Healthy resources.
Not for parents.
For parents. Yeah. But that's not who was in these camps. I mean, these kids were living typical teenager lives in the way that I would, like the kids from Euphoria. Like, I watched Euphoria. Yeah. You didn't watch Euphoria, but yeah. I watched Euphoria. And they're like, oh, this is so shocking. And I'm looking at it thinking, there's nothing shocking about Euphoria. It's just a bunch of teenagers doing teenager stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're going to grow up and they're going to be fine. Like all of them, like you could see that they're going to grow up and they're all going to be fine.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, you know, someone like, you know, I don't know, people that run Canada and they used to do blackface and now they're president. So,
right.
You know, I mean, I'm not saying yay or nay or for his activity, you know, I think that's pretty self-evident, but you know, it's, the shit that you do when you're a teenager doesn't always define who you are as an adult.
Right, right.
So it's the time of exploration and time you're figuring out boundaries and,
right.
you know, everything.
And being
and hormones.
And being challenging. And another line they said in the series that I thought was interesting too is those non-conforming kids our future artists, are the ones that can push the boundaries and can create, are the creators. So by sending them to these re-education camps, we are destroying their souls, we're destroying their minds. And another piece of information that came out is out of their group of kids, they knew personally of 40 who did not survive. And it's like we know maybe one person that has killed themselves, but to know 40, I mean, that tells you there is a problem here, a serious problem. So the origin of these re-education camps is from Synanon, what we talked about last week.
Interesting.
Yeah, where they would break someone down to try and cure them of their addictions.
Right.
And it was helpful.
Does this have anything to do with like the Pray the Gay Away camps as well? Is this kind of like in the same murky waters?
I think they're in the same murky waters.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't really.
They found that kind of failed too, right?
Oh, those always. I mean, those always fail.
I mean, if it was if you ever wanted, you know, two guys to go hook up, you know, go to the Pray the Gay Away camp.
Sell them to a gay camp.
You know, but I remember watching a little documentary about the Pray the Gay Away camps as well, and that there were people that were actually in the camps that were facilitating them. They're like, this doesn't work.
Right.
All this does is it makes you feel worse about who you are.
Yeah.
You know?
Depression and suicide.
It almost feels like those people are like, oh, well then, how about we just do it for all other behaviors then, not just being gay? How about we, you know?
I think probably the gay came after, because these camps started showing up. I remember, you know, because I grew up in Utah.
Right.
I remember in Utah hearing about these camps and kind of seeing one. Mm. There was one that was close to us. We talk about the kids escaping there every once in a while. And so I remember me knowing about them, but having no idea about the horrors that went on. And I think Paris Hilton really kind of opened the door for it. And I don't know if maybe she just, where it is, or if it was just part of her autobiography that she wrote, or like what the deal is. But there really needs to be legislation around what happens.
And I think the issue is that because it's revolved around these religious organizations, that, you know, they can decry separation of church and state. You can't tell us how to run our religious organization.
And I don't know. I don't, and a lot of them are in Utah. There's a lot of them in Utah. And there was one where they were talking about the kids. There was another program that was very similar to this one, but it was about the wilderness camps and a very similar thing.
Right.
And the deaths that have happened in the wilderness camps. And they had the sheriff on interviewing on the other one, and he was saying, this is not, I mean, Southern Utah is not a place to be outside in summer up in this, because it gets so cold at night. It is a million degrees during the day.
Right.
And
it's literally like the worst area to try to survive.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're putting kids out there.
Yeah.
Working them probably too.
Yeah. Working them, you put kids out there, no amenities. And these are kids who come from the city.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're putting them in these conditions, and it's just, it's horrible, but it's outside.
It's like prison work camp.
Yeah.
But where the kid legally didn't do anything.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know.
I assume not. I assume this is all because the child was defiant to a parent, or the child was drinking and smoking.
I mean, you could have kids with real issues too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to make this into being like the kids did nothing and, you know, they didn't deserve to. I don't think anybody deserved to be there.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to catch myself on that one. But that in the parents' mind, they deserved it or not, because these kids are extremely reckless, extremely dangerous, you know. So instead of us, they're going to go to prison kind of thing. We're going to send them there. So that's probably like that top tier of justification, right? That there's really bad kids there. Well, it's like, okay, well, my kid had a, you know, a Mike's Hard Lemonade. What's next? Yeah. Next is going to be something harder, and the next is going to be something harder. So we need to nip this in the bud. And again, another justification in their own heads, right? I mean, no kid should go through that. I mean, not even the really bad ones, no. In my mind. Like, they need real help, you know?
Yeah, and real help is slow and hard. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem, too, is that the parents are being brainwashed also. Mm-hmm. So not only are the kids literally being brainwashed, but the parents are. So they go into that in this documentary, which, because the question is, why would you send your child to go be abused like right. this? And the vast majority of parents would be horrified and yeah. not want to send their child away to be abused. And when they find out, they feel so guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So the parents are being brainwashed as well. They're conditioned to not believe the child.
Right.
They're told your child is a manipulator, and whatever the child tells you, it's a lie.
Wow.
Because they are manipulating you. The parents are told whatever the child says to you, you cannot believe. We are the authority. And then the child, to get through, to survive the program, just to survive, mm-hmm. they have to also lie to their parents too.
Right.
Or they can't survive the program. Right.
They have to say everything's great. I'm having yep. a great time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just, and it reminded me of a Nazi camp where
yeah.
the people come in and they have to pretend. And this is about survival. And yeah. these kids, they went through the different conditioning. They had to do this thing with their hands for hours, 8 hours, where they're repeating the same mantra. They have no bathroom breaks. They do sleep and food deprivation yeah. to reprogramming these kids, and they beat them. So not only is it's just horrible mental. And another thing that they do, these organizations do, is they go into a financially depressed area
mm-hmm.
and provide jobs. So they are in these like small towns
mm-hmm.
that don't have a lot of economy, provide jobs to uneducated people who use it as a power trip.
Right.
Who have power for the first time in their lives.
Unchecked.
Unchecked power.
Mm-hmm.
There's no oversight. And it's just brutal. And then, again, like in any cult, the cult members become the abusers. So as just to be able to survive the program, then as they move up in the levels, then the older kids become the abusers of the younger right. ones who are lower in the program.
Right. It's like the prison study that they did, mm-hmm. prison in the guards.
Oh, yeah.
Know,
yeah.
Know, study that they did.
Exactly. And they even brought that up.
Yeah.
Into like what creates this. And the kids literally cannot leave the facility. So they are locked in
mm-hmm.
and they are prisoners. Prisoners, and she was there for 18 months. She got out and she was terrified that she would get sent back because she was like 17 and a half
yeah.
when she got out. And she was terrified any little thing that she did, she would get sent back. So as soon as she turned 18, she was across the country and gone.
Good for her on that yeah. one, but you know, you shouldn't have to put yourself. Put a kid through that turning 18 and being able to flee is the only way that they can get out of these kind of situations.
Yeah.
It's just.
Yep. And there was one girl in their group who refused to break.
Mm-hmm. So and she killed herself?
No.
Really?
She refused to break. She refused to move up in the levels. Mm-hmm. And that woman really, very strong mind. She has the kind of mind as a child
mm-hmm.
that you admire, really admire, because the fact that she knew what was happening recognized what was happening and refused to let it break her. She's got psychological, they all have psychological issues now.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have that guilt of being an abuser because she refused.
She saw it before it could affect her to that level.
Yeah. Whereas the other ones have this guilt mm-hmm. about what they did to other kids.
And I'm assuming that these camps were a cost to the parents that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's another thing. So the they were paying about $3,000 a month and the kids were eating nothing. I mean, they were eating shit. Living in these conditions with minimum wage workers around them, uneducated workers around them, and their parents were paying $3,000 per child. The families, the Mormon family that ran this, mm-hmm. they are so wealthy. They showed their estate. They have what do they call those?
Houses?
No. They have a menagerie. They have like peacocks. It's like what Malfoy shit. Yeah, I mean these people were so wealthy based on the suffering of children. But it plays into the adults. So it started with the adults. Oh, you have a child who's out of control, who is gonna end up on drugs and
right.
die. And if you don't step in and do something, when the reality is maybe you cannot say yes or no.
Yeah.
Maybe, and that's what I always say to the kids, it's probably terrible. I'll be at all your parole hearings.
Yeah, exactly.
So I love you. But you have no idea. You don't know what's going to happen. But what we do know now is if those kids went through that program, they will end up.
Statistically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there could be a kid that goes through and is okay. But that's the rarity.
That's the anomaly. Yeah. That's
not
the data outlier.
Yeah. It's not like 99% of these kids are coming through and they're the same or a little better, and there's just 1% that's bad. You know, it's like, even though you don't want that ever, you know.
These kids are coming out of there psychologically damaged. Psychologically damaged. And to the point where they can't continue. I mean, it's bad. It's bad. And they have to have years of therapy, and sometimes even that. The therapist, she's like, everyone that comes out of here has complex post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right, because it's not just from one. Your whole identity is broken down to the point that, I mean, we talk about how to leave a high-control group, right? And that, you know, finding your truth of who you are and measuring that against something. But how do you do this? Because this seems like a cult on steroids. Like,
oh, yeah. This is re-education. This is Chinese government re-education.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can. Because you literally cannot escape. You are stuck there until you're 18.
Yeah.
And you've got parents who don't believe what is happening to you.
And probably friends and family too. That
and abandoned you to this place.
Yeah.
Sent you to this place because you did something so offensive by being an individual. So not only did you leave the high control, as a child is trying to test boundaries and not be under the control of their parents, try to grow up, then they're punished for it and sent to a high control
more high control group.
Yeah.
Because at least if you grow up in a high control group, you have some free time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are times where you're not being inundated and you're not being controlled 24/7. You know, you can at least get outside and mm-hmm. walk around or something like that, you know. So this is worse because now there's no time ever that you're away from the high control situation.
Yeah, they monitored their sleep, their bathrooms, their everything was monitored. And And another shocking thing to me too was all of the people in this program were smoking.
Yeah.
And I said that in front of my son, and he was like, "What will, you know, who cares?" I'm like, "You're right. Who cares?" Mm-hmm. They've been through the horrors, and they've been through the most horrible thing someone could go through. Who cares if they smoke?
Yep.
Let them smoke. But it was pretty shocking because we just don't see smoking on television ever.
Yeah, unless you're trying to prove a point, you know, like there's, yeah. You know, you're showing something, you know. It's not a normal thing to see everybody in a group smoking.
This guy, when he was a child, who was tortured in this room, mm-hmm. literally tortured, and he was shaking, mm-hmm. and he just like, he had to smoke. Like he had to smoke because he was reliving the torture, and so he, you know, he lit up a cigarette while he was doing that.
Yeah. Trying to quell any high anxiety that he has, you know, yeah. I mean, yeah. And I mean, if that's what you have to do to cope, to survive, then that's what you have to do,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I mean, if that's their worst vice that after coming out of there, I think they're doing better than expected.
I think most of them suffer through some kind of addiction.
Oh yeah. I can imagine.
Try to drown their feelings away and trying to just be able to sleep because mm-hmm. they couldn't sleep anymore. So just to sleep, they had to use drugs.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that leads to abuse, and then that leads, you know, it's just that slippery slope.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle.
But I honestly don't know how you would get through that. You would have to have really strong mental fortitude, and only that one woman had that kind of mental fortitude. But even her, she was still, yeah. she still had CPTSD.
PTSD. What is CPTSD?
Complex post-traumatic.
I didn't know there was another portion to that that you could add. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but I'll see. Is outside of the Mormon church, is there other churches that have the same kind of thing?
So they don't market themselves as being Mormon based. So I think anybody that's part of that evangelical religion, they look at this as an option.
Mm.
So I think the, and even the, where we talked about the Frankie woman.
Yes.
She sent her son to one of those wilderness camps.
Of course she did.
And there was nothing wrong with her son. Like,
yeah,
I couldn't see anything wrong with him.
Well, we have a whole issue with her and her normal children, right. You know, being, you know, what happens. I mean, sending them to a wilderness thing is kind of low key comparatively.
Not shocking.
Yeah.
Because he was testing his boundaries.
Of course.
And wanted independence and wasn't getting it. And so to counter that, this goes back to the high control Christian beliefs, mm-hmm. is that you have to submit to God and you need to be obedient. And
it's in the Bible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Obey your parents.
Obey your parents.
Yeah.
Honor your mother and father. And I've always had serious issues with that because even when I was in the church, I had serious issues with that because I had a drug addict father.
Yeah.
And you're telling me I have to obey this man?
Yeah.
Who, what if he tells me to shoot up? Like, okay, so right there, you're showing that this is conditional.
Exactly.
Based on whatever the condition is. So they treat it as absolute. You must obey your parents. But it's not really true because if you bring up any kind of like, okay, well, what if my parents said, do this?
Don't sacrifice
a cat to Satan. Yeah, what would you say?
Yeah.
And they'd be like, oh, no. And then you don't obey your parents. And they're like, okay, well, then it's conditional.
Yes.
Then this statement is not accurate.
And it's always the problem that I have with any of the organizations that have black and white rules.
Mm-hmm.
If if there's a black and white rule, then there's an issue in my mind, right? Thou shalt not kill. Well, what if you're being attacked? Oh, no, self-defense is okay. Well, that's still killing.
Right.
It might not be murder, but it's killing. You know, thou shalt not steal. My family's starving, and I will go to jail to steal for them. But that's a mortal sin. I mean, that's a sin against God. Do not provide for your family if it's stealing. It's like, yeah, I mean, I'd rather get a job, but if it comes down to that, you do what you have to do to survive. Mm-hmm. It again comes down to survival.
Yeah.
You know, and the thought that you, it's putting yourself below a deity every time. Don't steal. If I don't steal, I'll starve. Then you need to starve. Mm-hmm. That is the answer.
That's the black or white answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for.
And they obey your parents.
Obey your parents. Same thing.
If my father told me to shoot up with heroin, then I'm obeying my parent.
Yep.
If my father told me to sacrifice a cat to Satan, I need to sacrifice this cat to Satan.
Yep.
So either it's all or nothing. But this goes back to that you must, or you, there's another Bible scripture about sparing the rod.
Yeah.
Which allows.
Spoils the child, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which allows Christian parents, some Christian parents, to beat their children.
To death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is part of that thought, mm-hmm. that thought process, that you must be compliant, you must be obedient, you must obey your parents, and you must not think differently than they do.
I think that one child that was beaten to death was done so because he didn't pick up his Legos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the definition of you, of a child not respecting and obeying 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, God, if those were our kids and we live by those rules.
Yeah. Like, we have difficult children. And that's why I was so interested in mm-hmm. that Crumbly case and what happened to those parents.
Yeah.
Because as much as they keep saying it's not a slippery slope, I see it as a slippery slope.
Yep.
These are parents, are horrible parents. I mean, it's they were
yes,
but shit fucks.
But how do we get into degrees of
shit?
Hey, you need to stop keeping all of your anger inside and let it out more, okay?
Yeah.
But it might seem like this is a non sequitur going into the Crumbly parents, but in my mind it actually isn't.
No, it's
these
not.
These things are very much tied. Is, you know, there are things that the parents could obviously have done. Hindsight 2020 is, you know, it's always easy to go look back at a series of events that caused a tragedy to go, well, you should have stopped right before that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, I had 64 beers. It was the 64th one that got me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the 63 in front of me. If I just didn't have that 64th one, I would have been fine. And it's that same mentality, which is, it's so easy to look back at something and go, well, there was your problem.
Mm-hmm.
But while you're in it, you can't see these things, right?
Yeah.
And so whenever you have a church that's saying, well, we have a solution, you know, just pay us money.
We will fix. Yep. We
issue.
Will fix your problem with your child.
Yep.
And you've got a problem with your child, we will fix it. And it's an easy solution to a really hard problem.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a really defiant, difficult child who is breaking the law mm-hmm. and causing physical harm to themselves or
others.
Yeah. That's when it's really hard, when it's really dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But, and there's no easy answer. And so all of a sudden, if you've got desperate parents, if parents are in this situation, and I think a lot of parents feel like that, but the reality is it's not as bad as they're, you know, thinking it is. But there are some who are in this situation.
Right.
And then all of a sudden a program comes along and says, we can fix and we've got the answers and we will help you when no one else will help.
Look at our brochures.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Look at our brochures and here's all these happy kids. And mm-hmm. they get these testimonials from these happy kids who've been brainwashed. And it's like, finally, a solution to this really hard problem that I have.
So I'm going to tell you that when I was still in high school, I actually was in one of those brochures that was like that. So there's somewhere a picture of me with a backpack on walking down a road.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm actually in one of those brochures. But I had nothing to do with a typical kid that would have gone through. It wasn't like a rehabilitation thing. It was actually like a state funded, you know, we actually have psychiatrists on hand to try to help with kids that are addicted and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So it was all like, I mean, as far as I know, up and up, but I literally am in a brochure somewhere and I'm just like, I can't even tell you the name of the organization or anything. I just remember doing it, you know, with one of my friends at the time, because they were like, can you know anybody who want to volunteer? And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. You know, so, but the fact that in their outward face is a kid that didn't have any issues with drug addiction or anything else. So yeah, there's a picture of me probably smiling somewhere and not a true representation of what goes on or, you know, what an outcome is. So, you know, can't always trust what is on the website, you know.
No, and you cannot trust, and you can't trust what the people are telling mm-hmm. you. They're telling you lies. And then you're told your child is a manipulator. Your child is lying to you. You can't trust your own child.
Right.
And it's an easy solution to a really hard problem. This goes back to why people join cults in the first place. They join cults because they hear the right message at the right time.
Yep.
That they need something. And this is a cult that reprograms and damages children,
right.
ruins families. And because it's the right message to a really hard problem that we're not given answers to. So, I mean, the Crumleys could have sent their kid off to one of these re-education camps.
Right.
He could have come back way worse. He could have, like...
He might have been with his friend. Yeah, you don't know.
So, yeah. Because like, that's another thing they would do, too. It was kind of like an MLM, too. They would... The more people they would recruit, so like...
Oh, you got to be kidding
me. Yeah, so it would go in these circles. So, especially if you're part of this evangelical group of churches... So
you're going to... Spread the word.
The news, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they get a discount off of their monthly tuition because they brought in...
10% off if you ruined 200 kids' lives.
Exactly.
Wow.
And so I'm sure the parents of the Crumbly kid's friend were probably like, oh, we're doing this. And, you know, you come and you get a discount. So then they would have been in the same group.
Yeah.
And they would have known each other.
He would have just been scarred for life instead of...
Scarred, you know, other families for life. So it's a weird thing, right? It's like in that one particular case.
With hindsight being 2020 again.
Right.
Because at the moment that occurred, you have no idea what he's going to do in the future, right?
But see, they didn't even acknowledge that he had any issues. Mm-hmm. They were just like, oh, he jokes around all the time and... He says, oh, there's ghosts in the house, and he's just joking and hears voices. But, like, we have had that conversation with our son. Okay.
And to a part, our daughter, too.
Do you have, okay, these voices you're hearing?
Yes.
Is that your own voice in your head?
Because I have voices in my head, too, all the time.
That's called your conscience.
Oh, crap. I've been ignoring it for so long. Sorry.
So that's what we were telling him. This is normal. Like
what he would say, like, you know, we'll use an example for our son, is that he would have a voice in his head that just says, oh, you're not good. you're not, yeah. you're worthless. You're not doing good. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. So when I'm talking to my son asking, you know, is this how you feel about yourself? Do you actually feel this way about yourself? Or are you just hearing voices? Because typically the voices are bad when they are not coming from you. In other words, you need to kill your family and you're telling that voice, no, I don't want to do this. And then it's going, no, you need to do this. Okay, that is when the voices are bad, right? But when the voice is saying, well, you're no good, and you think, well, I'm no good. Yeah, that's your internal, you know, dialogue saying you're no good. Still not a positive, but at least it's something that you can deal with self-esteem and, you know, talking that out. But if you're hearing voices, you don't talk that out. We need to get assistance at that point.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with him. It's like, well, there's a demon in the house. Well, you know, our kids joke about that stuff all the time.
Yeah. All the time.
And then when you ask them, is there really a demon in the house? My son will go with a big smile. Yeah, it's me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm going to smell your soul. You know, he makes, and then it's a total joke. And it's like, well, okay. You know, looking now at the Crumleys, do I go, well, he needs to get help. He needs, you know, like.
Yeah. You know? And like, if they pulled all of our sons and our daughters' mm-hmm. chats and with their friends and their Discord yeah. server, I mean, that girl has said some horrible stuff that has gotten back to us.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine what our son has put on Discord, what they've said about us, what they've said about each other.
I've actually checked it a few times. It's nothing.
Yeah.
But it really isn't.
No, you just don't know.
Of course. No. I just, you know, because I was working on his computer and Discord was open and I was just like, let me just check, because I was just feeling funny at the time. And it was normal conversations that, you know, a kid of his age would be having with someone else.
Yeah.
You know, because my main worry is, you know, grooming and yeah. indoctrination into an ideology or something like that. And I won't be able to control it, but at least I could, you know, speak with him about it and what he feels, you know.
And that's another thing. That's another really hard thing as a parent, to hear Andrew Tate-ish comments come out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what do you do with that? How that is conditioning, that's a high control group. I mean, all of that Andrew Tate cult, that's all mm-hmm. really scary stuff.
And it's boys that are looking for a message.
Right.
Of control.
They're looking for answers to their problems.
Yep.
And here comes Andrew Tate with the right message at the right
and
time.
And all the answers. He knows everything.
Exactly.
He knows how to rape girls in Romania.
And he's coming with these answers.
Supposedly.
And so as a parent, I it's a struggle, but where I've come to is, which is so hard, it's their life.
Yeah.
It's his life.
Yeah.
And there are consequences. And this is what I tell him. This is your life. There are consequences to whatever you do. Mm-hmm. So he'll say, hey, you want to join our podcast?
Okay.
He'll say, yeah, I've been up smoking in my room. And I'll be like, okay, you know, I would really prefer it if you didn't smoke, but
I've done worse.
I've done worse.
Love you, man.
Because it's his life.
Mm-hmm.
And if our daughter, and some of the things that I've realized with my daughter is I look at her as an 80-year-old woman. I've told you this before. If she was telling me this story mm-hmm. as an 80-year-old woman,
mm-hmm.
how would I feel about it?
Yeah.
And it reframes
yeah.
what makes me angry or not angry. It's if she comes to me and was like, oh, my friends, we did this and we did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine her as an old woman telling me this story. I'd be like, oh, that's the cutest thing I've ever heard, yeah. you know? And that's kind of how I see it. This is life about making mistakes, having psychological security.
And if you've never made the small mistakes, you tend to make the big mistakes.
Yeah.
Later, because you don't realize you're in the middle of making a big mistake. You know, you need to be able to make a little mistake and suffer for it.
Have the natural consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I say suffer, I mean just emotional, like I'm feeling bad because I made this mistake, you know, and then you need to be able to feel that and then deal with it. And then you move, then you can go, okay, I made that mistake. I feel horrible. I don't ever want to do that again. Let me move forward instead of, well, we're going to protect you and force you to never make that mistake.
Right.
So then it's like you'll never get into that situation where you're not understanding, oh, this person wants to, you know, take me around the corner and, you know, it's like, that's a huge mistake you're about to make, you know. Maybe if you would have made smaller mistakes, you might have understood it. I don't know. That's all a theory from my head, 100%. Yeah. And again, there's no clear-cut answer here, but...
But this goes back to the Crumblies,
mm-hmm.
and my fear is that that set the precedence, even though I hate those parents to the son and back.
Yeah. But there's two parents. Separate issues with that, you know, you hating the parents versus what has occurred in the trial,
right.
And stuff like that.
Right.
And the other thing that I have a worry about is these kind of criminal proceedings for the parents might drive them to more of these kind of organizations.
Right.
Well, now I'm going to protect myself.
Right.
My kid's starting to have a little bit of issue. I'm going to protect myself by sending them away to these mm-hmm. kind of camps.
Causing more damage. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And another thing that really they didn't bring up at all, but I can imagine the amount of neurodivergent kids mm-hmm. that are sent there, and it's because they're neurodivergent, and just the terror of being neurodivergent in one of these places, the absolute terror that would cause. And
because it's these odd behaviors mm-hmm. are not because of rational thought. They're not going, oh, I want to do this right now, so I'm going to do this, you know, or like, you know, I've got a small impulse control and I'm just going to, hey, let me go deal with this. But, you know, these are wiring, you know, differences. These kids are not doing it out of neglect or spite or anything else. It's doing it because that's the way their brains are wired. And now they're being, that's going to cause severe masking in all behaviors.
Like, yeah, just horror.
How you make psychopaths.
Exactly.
At that point.
Yeah, it's such a horrible thing with no oversight. I wept at the end of it. I just wept.
So I'm going to play, you know, devil's advocate here. So let's say we do some sort of legal requirements for these kind of organizations, right? So it's obviously the prices are all going to go up, you know, even though it's $3,000 a month per kid right now, which to me is enough to have real specialists on staff with trained, like, you yep. know, individuals for like orderlies and stuff like that, that can assist. And, you know, I still think $3,000 per child would be enough for a month. Don't know. I'm not a business person as far as the numbers go. But you know that that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is that it's not going to be 3,000. It'll be 7,000, 8,000, 9,000. So then it's going to be like for the kids that actually need it, they can't get in. So now you have to be wealthy to have your kid get the correct health. And it always, like these kind of organizations, I feel they don't only ruin the kids that are there, but they ruin it for so many others that actually need real help, you know? And if, you know, you are having a problem with your kid, I mean, a real problem with a child that really does need help that you cannot supply, can you trust sending them to any organization that just says, we can help, you know?
I think there's a danger to any of it. And then there's the danger of that. And that's really how you called it. That's how you create psychopaths. Because if the child has so many behavioral issues and the parents don't know how to deal with it, then they send them away. Then you're dealing with abandonment. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with whatever issues the place has. There's no good solution. There's nothing.
And I'm, you know, I also, my mind just kind of shifted back towards the orphans in Russia, you know, that were raised basically in pens almost, you know, where they had no physical contact with anybody. I mean, you're a teenager. You still need some sort of physical contact with people, like loving parents, you know, even if it's just, you know, giving her son a hug. I feel that helps, you know, like it might not. Might not be like a fix, but it's, you know, it's just one of those small things. So now you're also removing from any sort of, you know, like physicality or lovingness, warmth that, you know, you would have gotten for even if it's 6 months. I mean, that can cause so many issues. We've seen what occurs when people are isolated inside of their houses. For long periods of time. And now you're doing this again to your child, but now it's like you're taking the maternal and paternal kind of parenting completely out of it as well.
And you're creating zombies. You're creating just
emotional zombies.
Emotional zombies, soulless. I mean, they come out of it. And one of the comments she said was, I wonder who I would have been if I didn't go through this, because it literally rewrites their brain to be something that they're not.
And there's no way of knowing. There's no way of knowing.
No way of knowing.
Because that is, you will never, ever be the person that you could have been.
Nope.
Or would have been. That is, that person's dead.
And there's no recourse. Mm-hmm. There's no recourse for these kids. They can't go back and sue. They can't.
Because it was all above board.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, it is just such a horrible thing. And it just breaks my heart.
Yeah. It
broke my heart. And it's control, religion, obedience. And I don't know. I'm at a loss for words because I don't know how you would get through this other than just years and years of therapy and mental fortitude, working on your mind. But even then, like we said.
And luck.
And some luck.
I think luck plays a big part into it. We know that talking to like a psychiatrist can help, but it's not a band-aid. It's not a fix. It's
not a quick fix.
It's sometimes not even a long fix. Yeah, it can help. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a Scientologist here and think that therapy is terrible. I totally disagree with that. And anybody that's, you know, thinking about going to therapy, you should go, because it helps you. It helps you reevaluate your mind and the way that you process information with someone that is third party, which can be very helpful. But we also know too that a lot of people go to therapy and they still wind up hurting themselves or others,
right,
as well.
So it's about finding the right therapist. And I think in this case, it's finding a therapist who knows about cult. Mm-hmm. Mind control, conditioning, that it's really important to find someone like that. Because if you don't, then the advice they're going to give you is rudimentary. So that's the first step, is really finding someone who has not only that complex PTSD experience, right, but also has experience with mind control and high control groups.
So we're going back to the CIA guy, you know, and with, again, if you know how to break someone down, there's the possibility that maybe you know how to build them back up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So finding the right person. And I think that's the only way to do it. And I'm so proud of these people that survived it and are able to lead a normal life.
Yeah.
They are strong motherfuckers.
Stronger than me, I think. Because I don't think I could have survived that.
I don't think I could have either. And these kids, they have some strong mental fortitude. And was really like, just to even think about it, it's starting to get teary-eyed how strong these young individuals are.
Yeah.
And so proud of them. But it's a hard road. It's a lot of work to do.
And there's no guarantee that they're going to make it next 5, 6, 7 years.
No, there's no guarantee we're going to make it next 5, 7 years.
Yeah.
You know, but we do the best we can.
I'm trying.
I would not suggest watching this series. It's heartbreaking, horrible. But if you're interested, I think it's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And it's called The Program, The Con, Cults, and something. I forget what it is.
Yeah. I wouldn't watch it. That kind of stuff affects me way too much to my core. You know?
It will affect you to your core.
Yeah.
And it will create outrage, which is something that really should happen.
Yes.
We should be outraged over what was on there, and there needs to be oversight and regulation.
Because I think with our conversation, I'm getting just that very tip of the emotional iceberg, and I'm pissed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
Hopefully they get all the help they need, and hopefully that we can have some sort of legislation that kind of controls these groups. And you can say what you want about separation of church and state. This is not a church versus state issue.
No.
This is the welfare of children.
Yep.
And your religion does not give you an excuse for harming children and causing this kind of pain.
Yep.
I don't care where you come from.
Exactly.
That's my hard stance on it. And I don't think I'm going to waver from that anytime soon.
Nope.
So.
Alrighty. Well, thank you for listening, and you have a good night.
Thanks, guys.